Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, November 12th.
Governor Susana Martinez this afternoon will announce several proposals to increase the number of healthcare practitioners in New Mexico. One of the initiatives to be unveiled in Albuquerque is a $1.5 million investment that will aim to expand the ranks of a variety of healthcare workers in rural and underserved areas. Rural areas of New Mexico have long suffered from a chronic shortage of doctors, dentists, and nurses. Loveless Health Plan of New Mexico's more than 100,000 members will soon be switching to Blue Cross Blue Shield under a new agreement. Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico President Kurt Shipley tells KSFR about the change.
One of the most exciting things about that is that it's got about 30,000 Medicare lives in it, and we don't have very many Medicare Advantage lives at this point, and so it's an opportunity for us to get into that market and that line of business in a much more meaningful way.
Under the deal, Loveless members will have access to their current healthcare network and will regain access to ABQ Health Partners providers. Loveless says it sold the health plan to focus on its hospital and healthcare centers. University of New Mexico hospital workers rallied today outside the Albuquerque facility to decry what they call anti-working family policies that impact patient health care and the local economy. Among the complaints voiced by union nurses and employees is the outsourcing of jobs, deficient wages, and mandatory flu shot policies. That last item refers to a management directive that all employees not having received a flu shot by December 1st to be subject to discipline that includes termination. The number of flights at Albuquerque Sunport could change dramatically as the airport's main tenant, Southwest, will be free to skip stops in our state. Today's Albuquerque Journal spotlights the expiration next year of a federal amendment that had required Southwest to limit the number of nonstops originating out of Dallas beyond a certain geographic area. With the rule removed, Southwest can fly directly to larger cities without putting down in the Duke City. Dallas-based Southwest is credited with up to 60% of all Sunport activity. A woman at the center of the lawsuit petitioning the New Mexico Supreme Court to rule on the legality of same-sex marriage has died. Jennifer Martin Newman Roper died last week of brain cancer. Her illness fueled the urgency with which she and her partner of 20 years fought for acquiring legal recognition of their union. An August State District Court ruling allowed the Santa Fe County Clerk to give the Española couple a marriage license. With her passing, her New Mexico certificate of death is the first to acknowledge a surviving same-sex spouse. Northern New Mexico charities that feed the region's hungry were seeking more people seeking food help even before cuts to the federal SNAP or food stamps program kicked in this month. Sherry Hooper of Santa Fe's The Food Depot says those charities had to turn people away and says the results translate into more hungry New Mexicans.
Just in Santa Fe County alone, 20,000 people access food stamps. And so that means the cuts translate to about 21 fewer meals for a family in need.
Hooper says the cuts force already food-needy families to further stretch already tight budgets. A proposal for a 2-cent sales tax on junk food is headed to the Navajo Nation Council for consideration. The legislation would add the tax to sweetened beverages, chips, candy, cookies, and pastries bought on the reservation, which spans parts of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. Revenue from the levy would be used to build wellness centers, parks, basketball courts, trails, gardens, and picnic grounds. It would also help to sponsor health education classes. Opponents argue the tax would simply push consumers to buy junk food in stores off the reservation. Last month was a good one for the state land office, which says it earned $68 million in revenue in October, marking the third highest monthly revenue in the agency's history. New Mexico Land Commissioner Ray Powell credits the successful month to oil and gas royalties. Powell says the royalty payments are critically important to the state's public education system and hospitals, all of which are beneficiaries of the State Land Trust. Carlsbad Caverns National Park officials have announced that, due to budget cuts, the popular destination will be closed New Year's Day. The caverns will also be closed on Thanksgiving and Christmas days this year. Historically, the Southern New Mexico Park has closed only on Christmas Day. A cost analysis determined it would be more expensive to keep the caverns and the visitor center open rather than closing on holidays with relatively low visitation. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today and tomorrow with highs in the low 50s, overnight lows in the upper 20s. I'm Tom Tropebridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices treading negative territory at this hour. The Dow currently off 57 at 15,726. The NASDAQ is off 11 at 3,908. And the S&P 500 is off 7. It stands at 1,764. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
10 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Mexico has announced plans to buy the Loveless Health Plan. Blue Cross Blue Shield President Kurt Shipley says the companies have agreed to a long-term provider agreement that will allow Loveless Health Plan's more than 100,000 members a seamless transition and ensure continuity of members' care.
We have entered into a definitive agreement with the Loveless Health Plan to purchase their Medicare and commercial membership. It's about 110,000, maybe a little less than that, across the state members, a lot of those in the Albuquerque market. One of the most exciting things about that is that it's got about 30,000 Medicare lives in it, and we don't have very many Medicare Advantage lives at this point, and so it's an opportunity for us to get into that market and that line of business in a much more meaningful way, and, you know, to have some critical mass there that we can invest in our programs and do a great job taking care of the members. So we're excited about that opportunity.
Shipley cites the fact that some 70% of the Blue Cross patient base resides outside the Albuquerque metro area for his firm's interest in acquiring the Loveless Health Plan.
And it's going to allow us to have a more critical mass here in the Albuquerque market as well, which will allow us, we think, to compete in a more meaningful way. The third piece is we actually, as part of this transaction, will enter into a long-term agreement, a provider agreement with the Loveless Hospital System, to utilize their hospitals and their providers to provide care to our members here in the Albuquerque market for the next number of years. And that's going to provide a much more stable environment in Albuquerque for us, where we know we've got a long-term contract in place, and we have a good contract in place that will allow us to provide will provide benefits to our members at more reasonable prices.
Under the agreement, Loveless Health Plan members will continue to have access to the physicians, hospitals, pharmacies, clinics, and services of the current Loveless Provider Network. Additionally, Loveless members will regain access to Albuquerque Health Partners providers. The future of the Loveless Plan's 350 employees is unclear and something KSFR asked Blue Cross's Shipley about.
Well, I think as it relates to the employees, that's something that the Loveless Health Plan will figure out somewhat with us over time. We will be working with the Loveless Health Plan to look at the employees that they have and look at the functions that we're going to need to add in resources on for servicing this new 110,000 members. And it's going to allow us to have a more critical mass here in the Albuquerque market as well, which will allow us, we think, to compete in a more meaningful way. The third piece is we actually, as part of this transaction, will enter into a long-term agreement, a provider agreement with the Loveless Hospital System to utilize their hospitals and their providers to provide care to our members here in the Albuquerque market for the next number of years. And that's going to provide a much more stable environment in Albuquerque for us, where we know we've got a long-term contract in place, and we have a good contract in place that will allow us to provide will provide benefits to our members at more reasonable prices.
Shipley says he expects the transaction to be completed by the end of the year.
Support comes from Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation with Luis Alberto Urrea on Wednesday, November 20th at 7 p.m. at the Lenzic. Urrea's book, The Devil's Highway, tells the harrowing tale of a group of Mexican immigrants lost in the Arizona desert. His novels, The Hummingbird's Daughter and Queen of America, chronicle the life of healer Teresita Urrea, deemed the Mexican Joan of Arc. Tickets available at the Lenzic or ticketsantafe.com.
14 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. Two grants totaling some $400,000 have been awarded to the City of Santa Fe Fire Department by way of the New Mexico Youth Conservation Corps Commission. The grants will provide funding for a wildland firefighting workforce to assist the fire department to stave off dangers when blazes threaten city-owned land. Joining us now to talk more about this is Porfirio Chavarria, Wildland Urban Interface Specialist with the Santa Fe Fire Department. Porfirio, tell us about the grants and what they allow for.
What it does is it hires youth to fight fire for the city of Santa Fe over the course of 6 months. And, you know, YCC's guidelines are ages 14 to 25 for this Youth Conservation Corps, to be hired by Youth Conservation Corps. But the city requires that individuals who fight wildland fires be 18 of age. So our age limits are 18 to 25. We'll be hiring 12 individuals beginning next January or February is probably when we'll put the announcement out. And then we'll be hiring an additional 11 individuals for another six-month round in September.
And the targeted purpose is to secure and protect those areas that could be the interface where wildlands meet more urban areas?
Correct. This will be the fourth time we've received this grant in 5 years. And what we've done with this program is employed youth. They become part of a hand crew, which is a crew that goes out and fights these large wildland fires on foot out in the woods here in New Mexico, like Tres Lagunas and Thompson Ridge that we had this past summer. And in the meantime, when they're not fighting those fires, they'll be doing mitigation work here and around the city. The first grant has us doing chipping, which will probably be providing or places for community members to take their slash or trimmings from reducing their own risk in strategic locations around the city. And then this crew will be responsible for chipping that and removing the material or distributing it elsewhere. And the second crew actually has a 10-acre project near Cerro Gordo and Upper Canyon right along the river.
And as we noted earlier, the funding for this comes from the New Mexico Youth Conservation Corps Commission. Can you speak more about that?
New Mexico Youth Conservation Corps Commission has receives, I think, 1% from gross receipts tax. They receive about $4.5 million a year, and they send out these grants to folks who apply. I believe about 45 grants are awarded every year out of, I'd say, approximately 60 applicants. And it's been very fortunate that we were able to receive two. And what YCC has really been helpful in doing is, you know, employing youth around the state. For people in the state, they require them to be, you know, from New Mexico, unemployed at the time when they get hired. And then they go and do natural resources projects. Our projects in particular is for wildland fire. Other projects around the state are to help construct sidewalks for maybe a state park. Or perhaps there's some other kind of a natural resources project that other people have. They've done community farms and river restoration projects elsewhere in the state. And we've been really fortunate to get these grants and provide, you know, youth, provide for folks here in Santa Fe and around the state a job opportunity. And not only that, but a life skill and a job skill that they could take elsewhere. We've had folks that have started with us and have now moved on to full-time employment with the structure side of our department, where, you know, they're doing EMS and on the big trucks every day, a permanent gig, or they've gone on and taken these wildland fire skills that they've learned from us and gone on to the Forest Service or even the National Park Service to work on their crews. So it's a really good way to get youth involved in wildland fire. It opens up a door to them to show them that there's this vast job opportunity in wildland fire.
Porfirio Chavarria, Wildland Urban Interface Specialist with the Santa Fe Fire Department. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe, where there's no need to don robes or shave heads. The miracle of everyday life, that's where real awakening happens, in the midst of ordinary lives. A taste of the deep, clear peace of authentic Zen can be found at Mountain Cloud Zen Center. Thursday night talks and Sunday morning practice with resident Zen teacher Henry Shookman. Everyone always welcome. Learn more at mountaincloud.org.
Employees from the University of New Mexico, Albuquerque Hospital, are rallying all day today in front of the facility to protest working conditions. Bill Brown is with District 1199 New Mexico, the union which represents many nurses and hospital workers, and he's joining us now from the rally. Bill, tell us what sparked this move.
We're holding an informal rally because for the last several years, the University of Hospital and the Health Sciences chose not to budget for a modest cost of living increase for the employees. Every time we go to negotiations now, their answer is, sorry, we can't give you anything because we didn't budget for it. It's not that they don't have it. They had $165 million that they were going to spend on building a new hospital, which is on hold. They also made another almost $6 million last year, above and beyond what they expected in profit. So, I mean, the money's available. They're just choosing not to give it to the employees. And part of the problem with that is that you have long-term employees that are leaving the institution to work somewhere else because they can get compensated better.
And we know another ongoing issue has to do with the outsourcing of jobs.
Now, the problem with the outsourcing of jobs is at times it might be necessary, but even if it's necessary, should it really be going to out-of-state corporations? You know, the last outsourcing they did, the company that took it over is actually out of, I believe it was Michigan, but I'm not positive, but it was northeast Michigan, Maine area. Could have been Massachusetts, and might even have been Massachusetts. These are good paying jobs that you know, help the community with a tax base. People were spending their money here. You know, a dollar in the community gets taxed approximately seven times when it's spent and made in the community. It gets taxed once when it's made here and sent out of state. So there's a loss to the community as a whole there. Part of the other problem was they just made that decision without ever involving the union in that discussion. So we were rather surprised by that. And then one of the things they did is they waited exactly 60 days, which is by contract when they have to notify us before they could actually make the change. And in an email, they actually said, hey, we don't want the word to get out that we're outsourcing. So we have to have this wrapped up before we give notice to the union. You know, I mean, it's behind closed doors and in the dark. You know, let's be transparent. Come to the union and say, hey, look, due to whatever, the cost, this, that, or the other thing, we're not going to, you know, participate in doing this work anymore. Here's our reason why. Here's the study that we've done to show that it would be more economically feasible to do it this way rather than keeping it in-house. And if they did an impact study and all that, we'd be on board with them, and then we can help make that change seamless. I mean, we're not here to lose money for the hospital. We're here to do what's in the best interest of the hospital, the employees, and the community as a whole.
Doesn't your agreement with the hospital say they are to sit down and discuss major changes before they're decided on?
That is absolutely correct, because, again, some of these things can't be helped. Was it a good idea that things be outsourced this last go-round? Because they didn't do anything the right way, I can't say for sure. But it certainly put us behind the eight ball on trying to help these employees transition into either new positions or retirement, whatever it might be, by giving us only the 60 days. There's all kinds of things that they've tried to just say, we're going to do this. They did the same thing with uniforms. They just mandated it. And the employees are expected to pay for their uniforms after the first year, but yet they want UNMH embroidery on it, so they can't use it anywhere else except for here. So really, you know, management should be paying for these things. They continuously make decisions and then tell us about it instead of negotiating, which is what standard practice is and what should be based on labor law.
Bill, another bone of contention with the employees has been mandatory flu shots, correct?
Well, with the mandatory flu shots, again, we're not taking the stance against flu shots. Our stance is it's a condition of employment. Once you make it a change in the condition of employment, then it's mandated that you have to negotiate that with the union. That's basically labor law. So for them to just, you know, they said they've been talking about this for years and that they've been really discussing this for the last several months, putting all the pieces together, and then, boom, here it is. And our question is, so where was our seat at that table? I mean, if you have to negotiate it with us and you've made this decision, then didn't you put the cart before the horse? You know, sit down with us and explain to us, you know, how this is going to be done and let us be able to negotiate the impact on the employees. You know, some people are concerned about what if they, you know, they've never had a flu shot before. What if they do have an adverse reaction? It's not that common, but it can happen. And, you know, we want some assurances as to how they're going to protect these employees and their benefits so that they don't have to use their benefits to pay for their time when they're out of work when it was a work-related injury.
Bill Brown of the Healthcare Workers Union, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. And that rally at UNM Hospital, which began early this morning, continues until 4 this afternoon.
Celebrate recycling and art at the 15th Annual Recycle Santa Fe Art Festival, November 15th through 17th at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. This green festival brings together artists who transform discarded materials into artistic wonders. The weekend opens with the Trash, Fashion, and Costume Contest and features an art market with juried exhibits. Learn more at RecycleSantaFe.org. Fashion show tickets at TicketsSantaFe.com. A message from Keep Santa Fe Beautiful.
25 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. It's estimated that U.S. charities will provide an estimated $5 billion worth of food to hungry people throughout the country this year. This month's cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, but most commonly known as food stamps, totaled about the same. This means that food charities such as Santa Fe's The Food Depot will have to work harder to make up for the loss. Rejoining us now is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. Tom, you visited the Food Depot yesterday and you spoke with Executive Director Sherry Hooper. What did she tell you regarding the food stamp cut's local impact?
Well, Dan, she started off our discussion by putting the issue in this perspective.
The cuts that took effect to food stamps on November 1st was about $5 billion. So for U.S. charities like the Food Depot to make up what has been taken from hungry families because of the cuts to food stamps, it would mean that we have to double our distribution in a year.
Hooper says that's an unreal quantity of food for charities to come up with.
The food pantries that we work with at the Food Depot are already stretched, and I can't imagine that even to make up 20% of that is unrealistic, let alone to think that food banks like the Food Depot and food pantries around the country could double their distribution that quickly is just unimaginable.
Hooper says the Northern New Mexico charities that feed the region's hungry were seeing more people seeking food help before the cuts to the food stamp program kicked in.
New Mexico as a whole consistently ranks at the top in terms of hunger and food insecurity and poverty. And we see that again in northern New Mexico. Some of the counties that we serve have poverty levels of 20 to 25%. So the hunger problem is, I always refer to it as a growing crisis. It continues to grow, and I don't know that we're all paying attention to it.
Another issue with the recent reductions in food stamps, says Hooper, is that less money for food forces families to make food decisions that aren't always nutritional.
Oftentimes, the cheapest and most filling food is the food that's calorie dense, but it's not necessarily nutrient dense. And so that's a problem. The Food Depot, we've really worked very hard to increase our distribution of fresh fruits and vegetables because we want to make sure people have access to nutritious food. Again, because sometimes they can't afford that kind of food when they go into a store.
Hooper says the Food Depot is readily accepting food donations.
And there are donation collection sites all over Santa Fe. There are food pantries throughout northern New Mexico and others who are doing their own food drives. Those are so important. If you have a business or you're in a school or you're part of a religious group or whatever it is, a civic group, conduct your own food drive. Collect your own food and make sure that that's available to the food bank or to a food pantry near you.
What to donate is a common question for the Food Depot, and Hooper has some thoughts on that.
People always say, well, what do you want during the holiday season? Well, what I always say is imagine sitting down to your holiday meal. What do you serve? That's exactly what we would ask for. Things like stuffing and canned pumpkin and cranberry and those kinds of things. People really work hard to make sure that a family can sit down to a traditional holiday meal.
Hooper says another major need for food charities is volunteer help.
There are food pantries, there's the food bank here at the Food Depot, there are soup kitchens, and there are others who are in desperate need of volunteers. So if you have time to give, please do so. And there is an agency near you. Give us a call, and we can let you know where there's a food pantry or kitchen or shelter or another agency that does this kind of work that's near you that you could give your time to. Financial contributions are very important. You know, it keeps our trucks on the road delivering food throughout northern New Mexico. It helps a food pantry make sure they have all that they need to give so that they aren't forced to turn a family away.
Hooper says the Food Depot distributes huge quantities of food and adds that much of that food is produce.
The Food Depot, our distribution of food, we anticipate this year distributing more than 4 million pounds of food, which translates to about 5 million meals for people in need. We also have worked very hard. Since we moved into our new facility, we've worked very hard to bring in a lot more fruits and vegetables. And about between 50 and 60% of the food we distribute is fruits and vegetables.
Hooper says the Food Depot is getting assistance from private grocers assisting in the battle against hunger.
The Food Depot is very fortunate to have a very good partner in Whole Foods. Not only are they helping this holiday season, but they help every day during the year. The Food Depot actually picks up food from Whole Foods 6 days a week throughout the year, and this is food that they pull off their shelves. It's food that's reached its sell-by date. It's produce that's not perfect quality, those kinds of things. But particularly through the holiday season, they're doing a special promotion that gives their customers an opportunity to help. They simply go through the checkouts and they can make a donation that will provide breakfast for four, lunch for four, dinner for four, or they can do either of those or all of them by making a donation again at the checkout.
The Food Depot announced yesterday that Smith's Groceries are offering customers a way to help out. Now through December 28th, stores are inviting customers to add a donation of $1, $5, or $10 to their grocery purchases. All contributions will be converted to Smith's gift cards, and the cards collected at Smith's in Santa Fe, White Rock, Los Alamos, and Taos will be given to the Food Depot. For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropebridge.
31 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. As winter approaches, some local ranchers find it difficult to keep their horses adequately fed and cared for. Now, thanks to a special program, there is help for the distressed animals. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard has the story.
Animal Protection of New Mexico has a new online project designed to help needy horses in our state. Victoria Canoff is the Equine Development Officer for Animal Protection.
We are very proud to announce the launch of an exciting new crowdfunding campaign in partnership with a crowdfunding website called loveanimals.org. Crowdfunding is a really new, fun way that philanthropy can be advanced, and that is to go to this website and just click on donate, the donate button, and you can donate as little as $10, which will make a huge difference at the Equine Protection Fund. So it's very simple. The project is called Help Save Horses, so you just need to look for that at loveanimals.org, read about the Equine Protection Fund and all of the great services that we provide equines across the state of New Mexico, and then you can click donate, and it's a very, very simple process, very cutting edge.
The online campaign runs just a short time.
We are trying to raise $5,000 before Christmas to help an estimated 30 to 35 horses this winter with emergency feed assistance or emergency vet assistance. The project ends December 25th, and we're hoping to raise $5,000 by that time.
Canoff says there are a number of needs for some of our more distressed horses.
The Equine Protection Fund is New Mexico's first statewide equine welfare and assistance program. And some of the services that we provide are emergency feed assistance, which we use quite a lot. We have emergency veterinary assistance for law enforcement and equine shelters. We also provide geldings for stallions and colts, and we have statewide volunteer network. And but basically, we do receive requests for emergency feed assistance, and our program allows us to help up to 4 horses for 2 months with hay and grain provisions. So that's one of our really popular and well-used life-saving services that we offer for horses in the state of New Mexico.
These services are for domestic animals, not wild horses.
It's helping families who have come into some sort of financial situation or job loss or medical situation where they're no longer able to purchase feed for the horses that they have at home. So by applying to our feed assistance program, they can feed their horses for up to 2 months. It's a temporary, not long-term process, so thereby keeping the horses at home. And, you know, once they get back on their feet, the horses will be fine living at their house.
There are a few ways you can give to Animal Protection of New Mexico.
You can go to our website, apnm.org, and click on the equine. There's a little bar at the bottom, the Equine Protection Fund, or you can actually go to helpourhorses.org, which will take you to the exact donation website, not through crowdfunding, but through our actual website. So there's information there about us as well.
Victoria Canoff with Animal Protection New Mexico.
We just like to ask everyone to step up and be a stakeholder in the stewardship of equines across the state. We have many donors, and we would like to add you to our list of donors that could help horses stay safe this winter, and thank you very much.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:35 here in the KSFR Newsroom, now on the backside of the hour. That presents us with the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
It should not have surprised me. After all, it was less than a week before Halloween, but it did surprise me. There in the middle of a sunny afternoon, the solidity of the would-be apparition could not be denied. There on the SUV's back window, the web address, ghostbusting.org. Of course, I had to look it up. It turns out that its first office was in Minneapolis in 2005 and moved to Santa Fe in 2009. Smart move. The company offers energy clearing services. Its president, described on the website as a psychic, medium, and paranormal investigator. Believe me, I'm not discounting the business ghostbusting.org. There's too much in this world and others we know nothing about. But you probably didn't know this. In some circles, I'm known as a medium. How do you want your burger? Medium, please. I guess I'm a polite medium. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard and Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.